in the Koinonia Fireside Room this evening is a forum titled Making Babies, Should Christians Do It? And the question of this forum is, what should Christians do and how should they think about the dawning age of gene therapy? This forum is 98-11. Let's listen in.
My name is Mark Schwain, and welcome to tonight's forum, which is entitled Making Babies, Should Christians Do It? Let me just say a few words about forums here at Holden for those of you who are attending your first one. Forums are really the time when the village gets to converse together about some issue or another. Normally our conversations, when they're at their best, should lead to everyone's leaving with a deeper understanding of the complexities of the issue, at least. We're not here to debate issues where there's one side that wins and another side that loses, but rather to explore them together, and in particular, to bring to bear upon these issues that many of us face, directly or indirectly, a Christian perspective. The technique we're using this year, just to try, is to focus these broad issues. Tonight, the very broad question of how Christians ought to think about the dawning age of genetic manipulation and gene therapy. Focus those by looking at a what could well become in the near future a real-life situation. And in order to do that, we dramatize that situation by first putting up a story that you can read ahead of time, and I'll read again here, and then we have four of the folks involved in the narrative who are going to play, well, four people here who are going to play the roles of people involved in this story. I should like to thank them for doing this and emphasize the fact that their views, which they will express with some vigor and clarity, we hope, may or may not be views that they actually hold personally. And once we get the dramatization going and get some conversation here, then we naturally broaden it out so you're free to question any of them or each other, and pretty soon the conversation focuses in on the big issue by virtue of beginning on this kind of particular case or narrative. So I'm going to read the narrative just to refresh your memory if you've read it already, and perhaps some of you haven't. So here's the narrative, and then I'll introduce the folks as I read it so you'll know who they are. Here it is, the year 2001. These technologies, when it comes to something like cloning, always move faster than everybody said they would, as Dolly proved. Caught everybody by surprise at how fast these technological developments move. So it may be by the year 2001 all of this is readily possible. Joseph and Mary, here they sit, Joseph and Mary Christian, have two healthy, natural-born boys, ages 5 and 3. They want to have one more child. In the course of their reading and conversations with friends, they have learned that it's possible to design their next baby to some extent. Joseph has learned that he carries recessive genes for some serious genetic diseases. How many of you saw Lorenzo's Oil last night? Any of you? So you would know from that, and maybe those of you who didn't see it would know from other things how really serious genetic diseases can be. And Mary would very much like a girl for her third and last child. They decided this will be their last. After consulting with a genetic counselor, Eugenia X, here's Eugenia, they decide to use a combination of gene manipulation and in vitro fertilization to control for sex, for the elimination of certain genetically caused diseases, and for a few other physical characteristics that are less important but still significant to the Christians here, such as eye color. The day before these procedures are to begin, Joseph mentions all of this to his pastor, Reverend Dorothea Nix. She urges the Christians to refuse them. Quote, children are gifts, not products, she says, and you're taking a terrible risk. You risk regarding your future daughter as a manufactured thing, not as a gift from God. Well, what should the Christians do? And how should Christians generally think about the dawning age of gene therapy? Let's hear first from the Christians, Joseph and Mary, and the situation they're facing.
Well, thank you, Mark, for that nice introduction there. You pretty much captured the essence of the situation. Maybe I can give a little more detail and help give some more insight to the folks here today. Of course, you mentioned that Mary and I are interested in having another child. We very much would like to have a female child. The way we found out about this technology, I was talking to a pal of mine, Gabriel, down at the local pub the other night. Actually, this was several months ago. And I told him, hey, you know, Mary and I have been kicking around the idea of having another rugrat. I told him, I said, you know, I'm concerned about the economics. Well, can we afford to have another child? You know, we are a dual income family, of modest, you know, economic means. We're comfortable, but we don't have a lot of extra cash. And it was at that time that Gabriel gave me somewhat of a tip on a new corporation that he had invested in recently, New Life Incorporated, and told me that his stock had been doing very well in this, and that maybe I should check with them and see what services exactly they had to offer, and that I might be interested in investing a little bit of money in them anyhow, even if we don't choose to use their services. So Mary and I did just that, got a hold of their service department, and they invited us to come in and discuss, their exactly what they offer and the limits and what they can and cannot do, and the cost involved. And while we were talking with them about this, the issue of my gene pool was brought up recently in a job interview. As part of my genetic screening test, it was discovered that I carried the gene for cystic fibrosis. So both of us were delighted to hear that in addition to helping us control for the gender of our child, they could also help us engineer out the risk of this future catastrophic disease wouldn't be for our child, but for perhaps her child, our grandchildren's interest. And to boot, they could throw in eye color and hair color for no additional cost.
Okay. So that gives us a little clearer sense of what motivated you then to do this.
Sure, good, sure.
But I want to add some of my
questions. Yes, Mary, please.
As Mike said, we don't have a lot of money, so we can't have five
Joseph.
I'm sorry, Joseph, yeah.
I'm here,
We don't have a lot of money, so we can't have five more children to get to a girl. So we want to have one baby more, and it needs to be a girl. And I feel really strongly that, in other countries, they use these techniques to select for boy babies. And I feel like I can make a contribution by selecting for a girl child. It's very important for me to have a girl child. So this would save us a lot of money in the long run and a lot of wear and tear. For myself, if we just do it this way, we're certain that we have a girl. And that's important.
Well, thank you. Also, Mark, I might, add that with, the recent pre-market deregulation, there's nothing illegal about these procedures. The law now says that we can use these advances, so why shouldn't we? from the medical perspective, I've always heard an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Hey, why not? And, you know, frankly, with Reverend Mitch's comments, I'm a little disturbed about why the church is always so slow to embrace these kinds of advances. This is some kind of Copernican, knee-jerk reflex reaction against this kind of technology? If so, I mean, why is the modern church threatened by this type of technology?
Okay, well, that's a good question. Why don't we hear, then, before hearing from the Gene Counselor, from Reverend Nix, the question has just been, is this a knee-jerk reaction of the church to resist these new technologies? Tell us more about your views on this matter.
No, I don't feel that it is simply a knee-jerk reaction against science, per se. The problem that I see in it is twofold, both theological and more relational or pastoral, if you will. But I don't think that it's just a knee-jerk reaction. I'm not into science, but I do think we have to realize that science does carry with it its own set of values and its own underlying principles, and we can't just accept those as if they're objective and we can use them in any way that we want. We have to make sure that, coming from our own faith-based perspective, that what we're going to take from science is compatible with who we truly think we are most deeply. And I think you agree with that. I've known you guys for a long time. I baptized your other two children. from the theological perspective, Mark quoted me as saying that I am concerned that we not see children as products, but as gifts from God. I'm wondering how this decision is going to affect your entire family's relationship to God from now on. What happens when God is no longer creator, or at least no longer good enough as creator? What happens when our idea of children and of people in general is shifted from being primarily in relationship to God to being, say, primarily in relationship to science, or at least letting science have a say as to how we want human beings to be? Will that make our primary identity scientific or, science-based? It does remind me, I'm afraid to say, of a lot of, sort of pre-World War II liberal theological trends that thought that, humans can do just about anything, that as long as we are smart enough and study well, we can sort of usher the kingdom of God. We don't know what the long-term effect of this will be, even scientifically. You say that you want to screen out for a certain gene, for a disease that might crop up later on, but we don't know what other things might be connected to that gene. Again, it's sort of a human being's perspective that's quite limited, we have to admit, even in all the advances that science has made. Now, on the other hand, relationally, my other concern is for your other two children. Are they going to get the idea that, they weren't quite what you wanted, that you wanted, boys are okay, but you really wanted a girl, and their eyes were brown, and you really wanted blue. I mean, it's like saying, we'd like to order our next child as if from a J. Crew catalog, and, you were a medium and you didn't quite fit, so we're going to get a large this time. So I really am concerned about your other two children in relation to this third, and how this third child will feel in relation to your other two children. Will she feel like a product? Especially if other people know about this, if your family talks about it, how's this going to affect the whole dynamic between your family and between the siblings themselves? So those are the concerns that I have.
Well, thank you. I think before we give you a chance to respond to that, we'd like to hear from the genetic counselor who worked with the Christians on this and who might be able to address, among other things, the suggestion that it may be premature to act on this prevention of cystic fibrosis. Perhaps doing that will lead to other unforeseen consequences that are just as bad and so forth and so on. Could you comment at least on where we are scientifically on this and whether the pastor is right in cautioning us, never mind on theological and pastoral grounds, which are important enough, but also on scientific grounds?
Well, let's talk about the science for a minute, and then I'd like to address our couple, Joseph and Mary, for a second, ask them a few clarification questions so I really know where they are heading with all this and see if we can't. I think our pastor here brings up some excellent points that I'd like to work with all of us.
so that we walk away from the situation with whatever decision Joseph and Mary make, feeling that it's one that the church can support them with and guide their life as a part of, so that this is a very productive situation for everyone. But this specific example, cystic fibrosis, one of the tricks scientifically is cystic fibrosis encompasses a very large region of DNA. And in fact, there's no single mutation for any single person that develops this gene. So the pastor brings up an excellent point that in the case of this disease, we're talking about a huge region of DNA, and every single person who has CF will have a slightly different mutation that's given them this gene. And without going into the science of the disease, we need to know that this is a very, very complicated example to use in screening out this disease. And if the couple would truly wish to eliminate all possibility of this disease, then we can refer to our good friends down the street, Sperm Donor Incorporated, where we could look at a whole different range of options for them. But so my question first to Joseph and Mary is, what is the most important thing for you in this third child? If you, ignoring that you have two other children, and say this was your very first child, what is the first thing that you say is most important for you?
Well, I think we feel we have a duty to provide everything we can for the child, and so I think health is really an important consideration.
Okay. And you've also mentioned here today the importance of having a female child. Has that been something that you've thought of for a very long time, or is that more a reflection of having two boys? Just tell me a little bit more about.
I personally, the boys keep me busy. I think I've got my hands full with them. But it's something that Cheryl has always wanted, a daughter.
Mary.
My first wife. I hate what I do. It's important to Mary, and it's important to me, and I think that's a worthwhile goal to shoot for. The technology's there.
Well, let's take a little bit different scenario with that. Let's say that we backed up 5 years before we had this technology, and you had conceived a child, had learned that it was a boy, but really wanted a girl. Would you have terminated the pregnancy in that context or not? I need to know where your heart really lies in this issue. Is this a convenience that as long as we're doing the procedure, you might as well screen for a girl, or to what degree is this extremely important to you?
I'd say it's extremely important to have a girl child. I think 5 years ago we wouldn't have been considering children, so this time we want it to be a girl.
Okay. With respect to what you mentioned, I think you bring up a very, very good point about being concerned how the other children will view this. Were they not worthy enough, so now mom and dad had to go out and hand engineer their own child? In the past, children have always felt, based on their birth order, that there's some reflection of their older, younger siblings on them in some means by their parents. How do you see this as being really different?
Well, when children are born naturally and a birth order occurs, it's not something that I think the children feel is something the parents orchestrated. It's not that, well, mom loves the oldest first because she chose to have him born first. It's not that sort of issue. Although, and in this case, I think it's extremely different where, if the third child is going to be sort of custom made, mom really does love this third child better because mom picked out how she wanted this third child to be, and this child has fulfilled mom's expectations, and we didn't. So I think it's a vastly different issue.
Well, let's take Mary and Joseph's, what they just talked about here, of they really want a girl. And if they don't use this procedure, one other option would be to continue having children until they have a girl. Now, that also would bring up those whole relationship issues with further boys they have down the line of, you know, mom and dad had 11 kids until they finally got their girl. So, you know, we're still looking at that same issue. That issue hasn't gone away because we've used a different technology. They still have voiced that they really want a girl, and they will continue. One option would be they would continue having children until they had a girl. So that issue is still there, whether we have the technology or not.
Right, I understand that. But when the girl comes as a gift from God, as an answer to prayer, rather than as something that human beings have created, I think it's only for the siblings too.
Right.
And also, I think it would be unfair of the parents in either way, in either case. And I don't feel that from them. I do understand that you really want a girl, but to sort of treat the other children differently or let on that you know, the preferred gender is girl, and it never happened. I don't know. Again, that's a relationship question that they would have to deal with themselves. But you know, we don't always get what we want. You know, now we have the technology to sort of be able to get what we want, but it turns children more as into a product, into a consumer issue, and I'm really concerned about that. I think there are some things that shouldn't be that way.
Okay, I'm going to declare the conversation among the four principals temporarily closed and invite others in. I want to say, I normally don't identify these folks and their backgrounds who are playing these roles until the end. But I do want to indicate that the role of the pastor is being played by someone who is preparing to be a minister, who's at University of Chicago Divinity School. The role of the genetic counselor is being played by Shursti, who has a PhD in immunology and is now in medical school. On top of that, to my immediate left is Cheryl Ney, who's playing the role of Mary. And she has a PhD in analytical chemistry with a specialization in genetics. And to her left, not Joseph, but Michael Dre, who's in law school. So we do have, you can address questions here, in other words, and expect to get reasonably accurate scientific information. It's not as though we just pick people at random here to talk about the science that's involved. I just wanted to be clear about that, as well as the theology involved, as well as the legal issues and economic issues involved. So you've gotten some sense of the complexity here and the kinds of questions that have been already generated. Now it's up to you to question these folks and to make contributions of your own. What should the Christians do about this, and what should Christians generally do regarding this whole dawning technology? Yes?
Just 50 years ago, the Third Reich was wanting to engineer tall, blonde, Aryan children, and the world thought that to be a despicable practice. Today, we're talking about the same thing, and why is it now favorable?
Would you care to respond on the difference between what you're doing and what the Third Reich was doing with their eugenic?
Sure. Maybe one distinction I could draw was that was to the detriment of anybody who didn't have the characteristics they were trying to engineer. What we're trying to do here is bring a new life into the world. We're not trying to discriminate against anybody, you know, anybody who's not like our child. So in that sense, I think that's fundamentally very different, a very different situation. We're not doing this as part of a national agenda to advance our race or our culture as superior to another.
Well, in my background is my family has a farm culture. And so, you know, my aunts and uncles have worked with animals on the farm. And, you know, my Uncle Al up in Minnesota, he's a dairy farmer, and for years he's bred cows to have certain characteristics. And so he makes choices about the cows he's going to bring into the world. We have the ability to make a choice about the child we want to bring into the world.
Okay, good. Other comments or questions?
What's the reason for having children at all, and why then not engineer them if it's just for our benefit and the children don't enter into it, what's that going to think?
Is that addressed to any, to these two in particular, or to the whole group?
What anybody wants to answer, anybody.
So this is a fundamental question. Why? What is the reason for having children to begin with?
Momentary loss of sanity.
I have nothing to add. I think this is a fundamental question that may well have a bearing on this whole issue. So let's all take some time to think about that one. And I think that could be a question for anybody here, not just the panel.
I think that is a huge question that people everywhere struggle with. Do they want to have children, or do they want to be a parent? Mm-hmm. And I think I hear that all the time. I mean, either from friends because of the age we are, friends struggling with infertility. You hear it in the clinic. It's a really tough question.
First of words plays a role there already.
Yeah.
I want to have children. Is it my right to have children?
Yeah.
If I have trouble having children and the right kind, should I walk on that? Or is it just precluded?
Well, personally, Mary and I both come from large families with, you know, brothers and sisters. And we like the notion of fellow siblings in a large family. So.
Yes, Faith.
With this incredibly wonderful genetic engineering that we can have anything we want, what is going to happen to the children who are born and put up for adoption? Why isn't adoption as much of a choice for the two of you, Mary and Joseph, as this incredible genetic engineer?
Well, that's something we really haven't given much thought to, honestly.
Well, and I would say for myself, I'm educated in science, and I know a lot about the technology, and the technology is available, and it's a technology we can afford. It gives us some certainty. And when we go for adoption, there is a lot of uncertainty. And
right.
So for me, I know certainty is important.
There are also many, many obstacles to adoption these days. It's not just like you go down and say, we want a girl. And that's going to happen. There are many. Every state has their own set of regulations and their own processes by which adoptions are regulated. They're lengthy processes, all of them. And frankly, we don't feel like we want to wait that long.
Again, it seems to me that the question, why not adoption, is also one that's linked to the more fundamental issue, why have children? I'm wondering, you asked that very good question, and it sounds like something you've thought about a lot. Do you have a view that might help us think through that? Why have children?
Yeah, I have thought about that a lot. Because when you have a problem having children, you're forced to think out why you want them. Mm-hmm. If they just come without question, you know, there they are and they're fun. If you have to work on it, then you have to figure out why. Is it important to me? One thing is parents. Do I want to be a parent? Do I have to want a kid? Do I have to something to occupy my life with? Or the big question in our culture, is it me living on? Other cultures do not have that strong. Others have it even more strong. And there it's good to look into other cultures. The adoption takes the Native Americans, for example. The children were born into the tribe, everybody grabbed them, and parents ran away, look what somebody else raised them. They're a common property. The Soviets tried that, didn't work too well there. Children is common property. Yeah, I just want to hear more.
Does anybody else have, want to say something else about
it? Let's say it is at its very base a selfish act of wanting to live out your own immortality. Is genetics not an extension of that?
Yeah. Right.
Is that wrong? We hear in our Genesis, the first thing that God says to us is go forth, be fruitful, multiply.
Mm-hmm. Do we still want to subscribe to that since we multiplied so successfully?
That's a good question. And there's certainly people who take that view, but for those who don't,
maybe they need to be talked about.
I might also add that last time I checked, this was a free country. This isn't China. This isn't the Soviet Union. And the choice to have children is a matter of family privacy, and one protected by our Constitution, and that, frankly, our motivations are none of your business.
Other thoughts on this question, why have children, or related to that? Yes, sir.
Let me twist it just a little bit and ask Mary, if your second child had been a girl, would this subject then have been a moot question?
Yes, have we talked about that, dear?
I think it probably would be, yes.
So that the real issue is having a girl?
At the most basic level, yes. But we can't forget, that we feel we have a duty as parents to do everything in our power to ensure that our future generation of children and grandchildren have every benefit that they can. And that applies in the situation of the threatening diseases. And even on a cruder level, we think that even the aesthetic reasons, if we choose that we want a child with dark eyes and dark hair, then again, that's our business. We live in a culture that highly values appearances, and we think that if we can do something about it, hey, God helps those who help themselves. Let me get a show of hands here. Without committing yourself, because many of you probably don't have yet a settled conviction on this, but how many of you think your view would be different on whether the Christians should go forward if their motivation and their practice were simply confined to the prevention of genetic disease, and that they had no interest whatsoever in controlling for sex, eye color, hair color, anything else? How many of you would have a different view if that were true than you do, given that they also want to control for sex, eye color, hair color? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Quite a lot of you, okay? So let's just suppose for a moment then that is all, let's just hypothesize that they're not concerned to control for anything except for the matter of, he mentioned cystic fibrosis specifically, but it might be other genetic diseases as well.
Call it general health.
General health, yeah.
Healthy child.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think it would be good to keep in mind that unless there's a big change in genetic engineering in the next 3 years, what they mean by genetic engineering here is that she would ovulate maybe a dozen eggs. They would fertilize them all, and they would check them all out to see which embryo has the traits you want, and flush the rest down the toilet. Is that a good thing to do?
Okay, so there's something about the process by which this is done technologically now that even if the end seems at least more worthy than the end of controlling for sex, that creates its own set of...
It's still like having 11 kids and keeping the one you wanted.
Okay. Others on this question raises a very interesting point. Is that pretty accurate about the technology that would be used at least in the foreseeable future?
Well, it is. I mean, there are examples of this is current technology. There are several successful pregnancies where they have done in vitro fertilization. I'm sure everyone in this room knows someone who's undergone in vitro fertilization. We'd be way outside the norm of the population. We use in vitro fertilization. You sample a small amount of the fluid after they've undergone several divisions. You look and see, do they or do they not have a certain disease? And then you implant the ones that do not have the disease. Now, in the cases they have been used, and Cheryl can comment on this, the one I'm most familiar with was a case in which a live born child could not result with this disease. It's a special metabolic disease. So to implant an embryo that had the disease would be to put somebody through 9 months of pregnancy and have a stillborn child, have a child that would not live. So from that point of view, you could say, well, you've spared 9 months. You've done that process with the technology we have today. So that may be a slightly different issue rather than saying, are we screening for color blindness? Are we screening for diseases that we can live with? Another way of looking at it is our society has limited financial means in the healthcare industry. And say a child is born with CF. Until the last 10 years, children born with CF generally did not live past 20 years old. Now they can have lung transplants. A lung transplant costs roughly $100,000 at the University of Minnesota. Plus all of the therapy, you would talk about millions of dollars into one child's life with CF. And you ask the question, if we are purely allocating resources, do we take $1 million to one child, or do we take $1 million and spread it out, and in an ideal world, we vaccinate, you know, 1 million children for that money, and we spare a whole other series of diseases? So that's an allocation of resource issues. You know, just to bring in some other thoughts into, so yes, in one sense, you can look at it as we throw those other embryos away. Another sense you can look at it is we take an embryo that we know has a certain degree of viability in the future. So that would be the genetic counselor response to that of, are we really throwing 11 away?
Okay. There was another hand up besides yours, I think. But that's down now, so please go ahead.
Resource allocation, that's a whole that's a problem. I have a different approach on this on the scientific level, a gene pool. If it's really a little bit analog what we're trying to do with human beings than what we did for centuries with animals, domestic animals, it's really not an improvement. Highly bred animals are not the healthiest ones. The broader space in the gene pool is desired. So maybe you're...
You were the one who raised that analogy, I think, with the dairy cattle. Yeah. You came from a dairy cattle raising family. Mm-hmm. Do you want to respond to that point?
Well, I guess what comes to my mind is you're talking about in general with the gene pool, and what I'm talking about is this one child. So my one child, that's my specific case.
Okay, the scientists came for a broader base. Is it good for humankind?
We haven't done the experiment.
Should we do?
I think there's a very big difference between inbreeding and selecting. I think those are two different things. From a technical standpoint, we're talking about very, very different things. But I don't know. And I'd like to hear more from our pastoral staff, too, because luckily scientists and medical personnel aren't alone in making these decisions. And in fact, on every hospital ethics board, anytime an ethical question comes up or at the National Institutes of Health, there's a broad range. And Mary can comment on this too. An ethical problem is raised. There's all kinds of evaluation that goes through. And luckily, it's not an isolated science community question.
Phil.
Yes.
Look at it kind of along these lines, long-term effects. If you, well, most things in nature are real, are very complex and very real fine balance. So I think right now, was it 51% female, 49% of the population is male? If you start tweaking that number so that suddenly we have 75% female or 75% male somewhere way down the road, what does that mean as a society? Does that mean suddenly we're not going to be able to reproduce in the same way and we're going to have the opposite problem we have today? Or blue eyes. Everybody wants blue eyes, okay? Well, blue eyes are a lot, have a lot more problems, blue-eyed people, with sunlight, with vision. So if we screen out brown eye genes, what happens to our eyesight? Do we start to go blind, decades down the line? Those kind of things. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that we can't even begin to comprehend now that can have huge ramifications if we start tweaking the dials.
And interestingly, to your first point, actually, the majority of conceptions and births are male worldwide. It splits out at roughly 56% male, but by the age of 11 is when you see the switch to female. Male mortality is much higher than female.
Interesting. Yes, sir.
I'm wondering who makes the decisions on a broad-based societal are there organizations now that are making these decisions?
Yeah, like I mentioned, each hospital board, when it's at the current level for genetics decisions, it's made through the National Institutes of Health in combination with the National Science Foundation and groups like that. And they try to limit very carefully. I'm sure a number of you have heard that there's a person in Wisconsin who's privately trying to clone out a human. And if necessary, the National Institutes of Health have responded by saying, we will shut down that laboratory if that goes forward. We will not allow cloning of humans. And very carefully is regulating what gets cloned in the animal kingdom as well. So, but those are not, like I mentioned, those are not just science. Those are people who have degrees in ethics and theology and most importantly, it's the people. I mean, this would not come up if there weren't individuals in our society who said, I want a girl, and I will go to means to get a girl. So it's among ourselves that we self-regulate, and it's among churches and every other body. If there's not a demand, we won't look at it in the same way.
I'm cynical enough to believe that one of the determining factors on the economics. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those who have the funds to purchase what science has discovered is possible, and those who don't have the funds will be like those that don't have funds for transplants. Mm-hmm. They simply take the natural course of death.
Let's return to the fact that we've been on broad social issues here. What are the long-term impacts for the human species of certain of these manipulations? And as Mary reminded us, she's worried about this particular child just for them. She's not thinking about the broad social implications. The genetic counselor ought to do that, public policy experts should do that, hospital boards should do that, but here's this family. And we posed to you before the question, how many of you would have a different view if it were just for the prevention of disease? And one gentleman responded, he's not sure his view would change at all because of the technology involved to do that. I'm wondering whether you, Reverend, and other theologians, i.e. all of us here, would have a changed view if the Christians here were simply interested in genetic engineering for the sake of preventing disease.
No, I don't think so. You bring up a good point when you talk about allocation of resources and the fact that someone with cystic fibrosis, down the line may need $100,000 lung transplant. These other children that we can help with that, with those resources. However, I have a real problem with saying that someone who we know is going to have cystic fibrosis is not as valued as someone who wouldn't have that. both, I mean, I know that's the general societal view, but I'd like for Christians to stand against that and say that, you know, we aren't in the business of ordering people in that way, even if they are diseased. And if having cystic fibrosis is going to mean a shortened lifespan, to us, we think that's terrible. It would be so much better if this person could lead a full life. And that might be true, but it might not be true. People with cystic fibrosis are able to teach us things that we cannot learn else in other ways. And we can't guess ahead of time how this person's life might be anyway. So I think that still, even if we're just talking about health, the idea that we're still going to have a choice about it ahead of time, before the child is born, in this way, just seems wrong to me.
Mm-hmm. So. Yes, sir.
How's that different from vaccination?
Mm-hmm. I would support that the input of the people who found the patient health, you know, it's genetically related, treat that a little different than vaccination. If somebody's been born with the disease, I think it can be prevented before they are born. I don't care if it's genetic or biological.
Okay. So can other people help us on the question, besides this gentleman, on what's the difference between vaccination and what's being recommended here on this genetic engineering?
I might add, so this kind of goes back to my comment earlier about my belief that God helps those who help themselves. This capitulation to biology, which we hear from the ivory tower of the church, telling us that, sure, you know, bring this child into the world and let that child suffer. It's easy for somebody to say that from a distance. But as parents, we have to think about that with more empathy. And think about the suffering that's going to occur, and take action. I think God wants us to use our knowledge to improve humanity.
That sounds like my idea about the parent suffering and all that, as well as the child himself having to go through that agony.
Okay. So why not use up
some? But to help us out as a pastor, where in the scriptures we find that God helps those who help himself, or if this might just be a bit of folk with.
Do you have additional theological reasons to join this pastor in explaining why this ought to be resisted, even if it's simply confined to the prevention of certain diseases? Or isn't that your view?
Heard miracle healings in the Bible anyway.
I was just looking at the scriptural reference to what he was.
Okay.
I think he might have gotten that off a bumper sticker somewhere.
Bumper sticker theology. Anybody else want to put in a word for what they're doing? We've heard some reasons to caution against it. The actual technological procedure used has been one. You've heard Reverend Nix again speak out against that as to wondering why we should be playing God in terms of what's more valuable and less valuable and so forth. Yes, sir, back there again.
Well, you know, where do you draw the line? We're playing God today. The medical profession plays it every time they give a diagnosis. So what's the difference? All we're doing is extending it a little bit further.
We didn't create the diagnosis.
You might unpack that a little bit.
When the medical profession, what we do today, I think is more in the realms of treating and prolonging life rather than attempting to truly alter life. Do you want to respond at all to that?
I think about that.
I mean, it's been said by someone in the public health field that the single greatest advances in medicine are due to vaccination, chlorination, and sanitation. Mm-hmm. So.
Yes.
I just wonder what people think are the chances that this view would not just go ahead, because it's logical, it saves resources, it's scientific, people want it. Is there a chance that it won't go ahead? You know, even though we might believe that that's not right.
Is there, in other words, a kind of inexorability once these technologies become available?
That's right.
That they will simply be used?
Mm-hmm. And can the theological view or the humanistic view or other views, can they have the strength? Is there a hope that there would be any strength that would stop that?
Or in other words, the economic, this gentleman over here mentioned the economic forces and the technological forces so overwhelming that even if, in some sense, the moral and theological views have more cogency, they will simply disappear and be run over by the juggernaut of modern genome project and its applications.
And the economics of healthcare today.
Yes, Cheryl
would like to speak.
Cheryl's now stepping out of the role and would like to speak.
Yeah, I've been looking at the ethics of this of genetics for probably now about 10 years. I've been associated with conferences and workshops, and you know, even though I know that the federal government allocates a certain portion of the funding in this kind of research to examining the ethical issues, to me this is just like railroad creep here, that the genetic issue is just going to, the corporations are just going to roll it down the hill, and all we're ever going to do is move the stream a centimeter. So, you know, I like to raise this issue because I think we've got to seriously think about this. And I think it's probably legal regulation that's going to be our only dam, so to speak.
Well, it's a lawyer talk. They're always behind those things. They can't get it together. The European Union just missed their chance on it. I don't think we can count on anything to get ahead of that issue. Science is going to push it, and it will be available, and the free society, as we heard, will do what they feel is their right.
But do you think it's science that's pushing it?
Yes.
See, I would argue.
I would argue otherwise.
I feel more strongly that it's the corporate capitalism that's driving it.
Because they're making
money. There's money in it. Yes.
There's a lot of money.
Yeah. But scientists will explore what is there to be explored.
Not all. I myself know molecular biologists who lead the field.
That's what the scientific environment is. Find something to explore, make your doctorate, make your fame, find something. And this is a big issue.
I agree that I think it's corporate that's behind it, and I'll throw in a science fact on this too, that there's no way we could ever purely, I mean, our science knowledge says there's no way we could purely, completely clone a person. You know, God has thrown in a caveat, and that is in the immune system and in the central nervous system, there's random recombination of DNA that goes on that we cannot control. It's completely out of our control. We do not understand it. And in my belief, we could, I don't think 2,000 years from now, we would have the technology to handle what it is we're talking about. And I think that there are masterful creations on the spectrum of God's great work that has taken care of some of this. I don't believe that we are the moment in time in technology that's going to alter all of God's creation. I don't believe that. I don't believe we're that powerful. So from that perspective, I'd say to an nth degree of how extreme this could get, no. To the degree that could people select for sex?
It's already happening.
It's happening.
It's happening, and it'll happen in different contexts. And there are many cases of people who terminate pregnancies based on sex once they know sex. So that's, you know, we give, in this country, we value reproductive right. And we stand behind that on many different levels, both in our Christian theology and outside of it. So that's something that we can't regulate. And I think that also, you know, remember that scientists and doctors are people. You know, we're no different than anyone else, and we're parents, and we're Christians, and the whole bit. So
So it's not this entity that's out there that doesn't have it. And I think that it's really up to us to guide the path of where technology goes.
I think that that's a very good last word, and I'm going to just attempt to wrap up here a bit, not so much to summarize the vast number of very wonderful contributions we've had from all of you, so much as to just make a couple of observations. Lest we end on a kind of council of despair, I'm talking not about what you just said, but what some others have said and that many of us feel about there being a kind of juggernaut out there, driven by, some would say, corporate capitalism, others would say the scientific enterprise. For the moment, let's not try to sort that one out, but I think many of us feel in the grip of certain forces that we don't have control over. I think that one encouraging word we've heard tonight in face of that juggernaut is the number of people who were able to introduce together a number of interesting distinctions. Instead of lumping everything together, people were able to say, well, certain technologies that may enhance fertility may be fine, but in vitro fertilization represents its own set of problems, and as this gentleman pointed out, one might want to say no to that technology available to make fertility more likely, while one would say yes to certain other things that don't have that particular character. In other words, it seems to me Christian people can make together, when we pool all of this expertise, thoughtful decisions, even if the culture at large is being driven down like railroad creek towards some given end. And if enough people make enough distinctions along the way, that could add up to certain larger movements. But in the meantime, it does seem to me that we ought not succumb to a council of despair, but instead take some heart from the fact that people, even in this room tonight, made a number of interesting distinctions without being complete anti-technology sorts. I mean, certainly no one here opposes vaccination. Few people here would oppose a number of things that do enhance fertility, but when we get down to meddling with the character of the species itself, as we've heard, that's distinct from simply doctors treating what's brought to them through processes that don't have as their sort of source a certain kind of genetic engineering. So we heard all kinds of distinctions that I think were very, very helpful. And we also, I think, were collectively alerted to the fact that these difficulties that I wrote up in this little scenario aren't that far-fetched, aren't that far away. Some of them, the future is now. Some of them, the future is very soon. And it's obvious that we're going to need in our parishes and schools and other institutions where we do have some control and families, a lot more of this kind of reflection where we can rely on each other's expertise, and we need that more than ever. So thanks for kind of exemplifying that. This conversation will actually, I'm sure, continue on tonight and tomorrow. And thanks again to the panel.